Whether you're just looking to stay warm during a hunt or need maximum concealment, the clothing you wear can make or break a hunt. At MidwayUSA.com, we understand hunting clothing has come a long way with more meticulously crafted camo patterns, advanced scent control technologies, and weatherproof options to withstand the elements. Hunters have to wait until their favorite season, but shouldn't wait on gear, which is why MidwayUSA offers super fast shipping. When you're ready for your next system, log on to MidwayUSA.com.
Hey everyone, Will Cooper here, host of Hunt Stand's Make Your Mark podcast. Join us as we dive deep into the world of hunting and outdoor pursuits. We've brought together some of the most accomplished individuals in the industry to share their invaluable insights and experiences with you. But here's the kicker. It's not just about hunting tips and tactics. We're exploring how you can carve your own path, elevate your skills, and gain some wisdom from the best in the field. So whether you're a seasoned hunter looking to fine-tune your skills or a newbie eager to learn, our podcast has something for everyone. Stay tuned for more exciting guests and hotter topics. Don't miss out and subscribe to Hunt Stand's Make Your Mark podcast today and start making your mark in the great outdoors.
Welcome to DSC's Campfires with Larry Wysoon, the unique blend of hunting, conservation, and the outdoor lifestyle, delivered in an entertaining, informative fashion that only a veteran outdoorsman can do. DSC Campfires is brought to you by DSC, Conservation, Education, and Hunter Advocacy. Hornady, accurate, deadly, dependable. Trigicon, brilliant aiming solutions. Ruger, rugged, reliable firearms. Burnham Brothers Game Calls, callingest calls made. Double Nickel Taxidermy, where hunting memories are preserved. Taurus, maker of the Raging Hunter and other fine handguns. Now here's your host, Larry Wysoon.
David Fox, thank you for another fantastic intro. And this morning, the campfire, the DSC campfire, is in Fredericksburg, Texas. And I'm with a young man whose name is Ryan. And Ryan, I'll ask you to spell your name and to how to get in touch with you.
Sure, yeah. Ryan Hoover. It's R-Y-A-N. Hoover like the vacuum cleaner, H-O-O-V-E-R. And you can get in touch with me at Handgun Hunter Supply or through HandgunHuntersInternational.com.
Very interesting. I came across you some time ago because of a love of handgunning. Now, tell me a little bit about your background, because where I really want to go with this is what you're doing these days. But what kind of got you to this point, and where did your interest in handgun hunting come from?
Well, it kind of, like the handgun hunting industry itself, it kind of waxed and waned a little bit. And but when I was a kid, I had a guy in our church who took me under his wing, taught me how to hunt. And so I bought Guns and Ammo. No. Peterson's Hunting. That was the first one I bought off the rack. And I went into the back and I wrote off for every catalog I could get. You know, back when you had to do stamps and all that stuff.
I remember it well.
And so my dad was so, he's like, where did all my stamps go? And so I sent off and I get all these catalogs. Well, I got the Thompson Center catalog. And in the 1995 Thompson Center catalog, they had a centerfold which listed all the different calibers that you could have that they offered in factory barrels. And at the bottom was a 300 Whisper. And, I was thinking, what is this? I've never heard of this before, right? And that led me down the path to getting, like, the versatility of the TC. Then I learned about J.D. Jones and SSK Industries. I'm an avid reader. I'm self, like, almost everything I know, I've read. That's how I teach myself. And so I picked up Hunting for Handgunners, and then Mark Hampton's books, and I've just read those many times over the years. Another one was about that same time I picked up the 1995 Guns and Ammo Annual, which I still have. They reprinted two articles by Elmer Keith in those. The first one was about double guns, big bores, but the second one included his famous story about killing a mule deer at over 600 yards with his revolver, and I was intrigued, got me thinking with between him and JD, and that was the 90s, and that was handgun hunting was still going strong. What's this all about? Well, I took after high school, I left and did a stint in the Navy as a gunner's mate. So I was basically, we call them gun plumbers, we were changing parts, and yeah. But my love does not lie with those kinds of weapons. It's just that was what my experience was. So after I got out, came home, and worked at McBride's in Austin.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I did a year in 2005. Yeah, I was there for a whole year working in their gunsmith shop, and it was really good for me because Joe McBride had me clean and test fire every used gun he bought. So I learned how to work on everything.
Yeah, but yeah. How cool.
Yeah, it was great.
Great experience.
It was really great, and I got to see some weird guns, you know.
And, I can imagine.
Yeah. So at that point, I was still thinking that I wanted to be a general gunsmith, you know. The men in my family aren't noted for their wise financial choices. So after that time at McBride's, I went to TSTC in Waco, Texas State Technical College.
Yes.
And I spent a year there learning how to be a machinist because I figured I didn't want to leave Texas to go to one of the gunsmithing schools. I had just gotten home out of the military and I didn't want to leave. And I figured if I had a machining background, I could get a job while I was building my shop. So I tell you, I'm not endorsed by TSTC, but man, was that school fantastic. I got my certificate in machining, and all I did when I was at school was machine. I learned how to do what I was there to do, and I was well taught by guys who were from the industry, and I came out with a really good base of knowledge on how to run machines, both CNC and manual.
Right, right.
And that was great.
Again, a tremendous background.
Well,
so you're building a very solid foundation.
Yeah, that was the idea. Yeah, absolutely. So while I was after that, I came to Fredericksburg back home, and we have a lot of machine shops here. We have an uncommon number of machine shops here. Got a job working at a machine shop programming CNC machines while I built up my business. I got my FFL in 07, and then I was off to the races. I worked in my garage for a little while, and then I got married. My wife kicked me out, and then for a long time, I did the warranty work for Cimarron Firearms. So, I have a long history with them, and now here I am in this. I have a 1,200 square foot shop. I have a master gunmaker who works for me, and I've really discovered that my love, as most people in my life probably could have told me 10 years ago, is talking. You know, I love meeting people and talking and hunting and. But to circle back around. From when I was a kid, self-reliance just fascinated me. The idea, because even though we lived in Austin at the time, there was a quarry that had been backfilled with water, and it was a great fishing spot. So I would take a spool of line. I didn't have a rod. A spool of line with a hook on the end and some white bread, and we go catch sunfish off the dock and have my dad fry them up for us. And the idea that I could go and get my own food, that was just... It has always been just so intriguing to me. When I was 13 or 14, I I killed a squirrel in our backyard with my pellet gun in Tarrytown in Austin, which is a nice name. Me and my two brothers terrorized that neighborhood. The guy from church who had me under, that I mentioned, he came over and showed me how to gut and skin the squirrel, and we barbecued it, and I was like, I just thought it was the best thing ever that I'm eating something I got.
Now you truly are.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly right. And so then, I mean, I garden, we have chickens, and we eat what we kill. And that, to me, is the real deal about everything. Now, handgun hunting just ups the challenge, which, in my opinion, in my experience, ups the reliance on yourself. You know, you gain discipline. You gain... you gain confidence in yourself when you because becoming proficient with a handgun is so much more difficult than shooting with a rifle, you gain confidence in other areas of your life. Like, if I can apply the discipline to do this, what else can I apply it to in my life? And to me, handgun hunter means so much more than someone who just hunts with a handgun. It's kind of an ethos, a lifestyle of self-reliance, sometimes stubbornness, and... as you well know, having been doing this a lot longer than me.
Well, I grew up out in the country, and I was also around people who were involved in law enforcement quite a bit. Mm-hmm. And so I was fascinated with some of the handguns that they carried. And of course, I came along during the time when the cowboy movies and cowboy TV shows, whenever there was any time to go to a movie or to watch TV, it was always about cowboys with six guns kind of thing.
Yeah.
So that created a fascination for me about the handguns. And because what you just mentioned, there is that challenge of it is a little bit more difficult to shoot in a rifle, but like anything with a barrel, the bullet goes where the barrel's pointed when you pull the trigger kind of thing. But tell me a little bit about your background in terms of hunting with a handgun.
Well, you know, I always tell people I'm not an expert. I'm an evangelist. And I'm working on kind of a project that is that evangelist to expert deal. So I did not really start hunting with a handgun exclusively until just a few years ago. I mean, maybe 4 years ago or something. I was at a point in my career where it was kind of one of those, I was definitely not in my midlife, but it was one of those things like, what am I doing?
Right.
I'm not happy. I don't want to fix another semi-automatic 22 rifle. And I don't want to have the conversation with somebody that's going to cost five times what their gun's worth to get it fixed.
You know? Right.
I do love offering that service to my local community because I'm sure you know how few general gunsmiths there are left. I'll take this opportunity to tell you what I always tell people about general gunsmiths is that being a general gunsmith is like being a car mechanic and one day being asked to work on a horse and buggy and the next day being asked to work on an F1 McLaren and being expected to know to be competent at each. So, you know, that it's a sad truth of our world today that if you want to be successful and you want to be able to feed your family, specialization is really the way to go. But anyway, back to what I was saying about handgun hunting. I saw online a guy. Have you ever heard of W Gear? Yeah, Cody
yes.
Weiser
yes.
Had Mike Abel build him a single shot 45-70 on a Model 7 action with a cut down choke stock. You know the old plaster disaster stocks they call them?
Oh, yeah.
So I saw that and I was like, what is that? You know, it's this crazy looking thing. I think he calls it Dolores or something like that. And I thought, well, I wonder what that is. Could I do that? So back at the time, Remington Actions were still available, so I picked one up. I bought a stock from Revolution. They're the Cricket people, the Keystone Sporting Arms people.
Mm-hmm.
And I cut it down and I bedded it, and I made a bolt action pistol in 458 SOCOM because I had had the reamer and I just wanted to see what to do. The gun ended up weighing 7.5 pounds, like not a stalking gun, but
but
that first season I put a sling on it. I got a bog pod, red legged devil bipod. I stalked around the woods here in my county, and I killed a pig, a whitetail, an axis, and an elk with it. And it was just amazing. You know, just like one of those when the sky parted and Moses got the Ten Commandments kind of deals. Like, this is how you connect what you love to how you make a living. And so the next, that was great. The next seasons were mostly stumbling, to be honest. I had so many misses. I developed an anxiety-induced flinch. I don't have any unrecovered game, no serious wounded game that got away, because I was, you know, I realized I need to get to the range and practice this. So I limited my hunting to things that I knew I could accomplish, like distances that I set boundaries for myself.
Right, exactly.
And it's all kind of culminated in the past 6 months with my increased dedication to practice. I went to two competitions this summer that were focused on handguns only, and I couldn't be more excited for this next season.
Tell me a little bit about the handgun long range distance that you were shooting in.
Oh.
And why that?
So handgun hunters are a small but vociferous community.
True.
You know, there and the handgun hunting community is, you know, like I mentioned, waxed and waned, and I believe right now it's waxing. But there is a core group of people who've been doing it for a long time, so you can find a lot of good information online of experienced amateurs.
Right.
And I came across in some of the groups I was involved in with a guy named Ernie Bishop. Ernie Bishop is a, in the circles, a well-known single-shot, bolt-action pistol shooter. And he always, like, he does group buys for McMillan stocks for XP-100s. He's always buying and selling. And I bought a pistol stock from him for a custom pistol we're building in the shop, and learned about a competition he put on called Y-Shot in Gillette, Wyoming. And he, this is strictly a long-range pistol competition, with shot mostly with custom XP-100s. I was using an XP and 6.5 Creedmoor, and it's a two-day course, and the furthest target you engage, which is on the second day, is 1,444 yards. I think it's a 16 by 18-inch target. Now, I want to caveat that by saying these are not distances at which I would ever promote hunting game.
Right, exactly.
But to me, it is just a great example of breaking the boundaries of what people think handguns are capable of. So I was able to, I was still dealing with my flinch, which I did overcome to some degree by the end of the first day, and was able to make hits on that 1,400-yard target, the second shot, on the timer, which was a huge confidence booster, mountain,
oh my gosh,
ascended,
yes, yes,
type deal for me. And I don't want to say, I'm nothing special about that. I'm not a world-class shooter. I'm not even a state-class shooter. You know, I had a good gun, I had a good spotter, I had a good coach that helped, you know, encourage me. The group, you know, as you know, the handgun hunting community is almost nothing but encouraging. And it was truly due to the circumstances that I was able to do that. And I left with, like, this feeling of, okay, I'm ready to ascend the next hill.
That is so cool. What barrel length were you using in that?
I think that gun had a 15-inch barrel.
15-inch barrel.
Yeah, yeah. It was really cool. It was really great. Yeah.
That is interesting. I've shot contenders and XP-100s in years past, and I've shot out to 500-600 yards. Mm-hmm. Never really tried beyond that. I've shot prairie dogs 500 yards,
right? Yeah,
with those guns. But to me, I've never really tried to stretch it beyond that. Mm-hmm. But that's really interesting because it shows, particularly with the rifle type caliber and cartridges in a short barrel, what can be done at long ranges.
Right. And, you know, as a gun builder, I've always known that barrel length had zero to do with accuracy, only velocity. The barrel length is really only affects your velocity. And so, yeah, you have a little bit more of a rainbow trajectory with shorter barrels, but they can be every bit as accurate.
One of the things used to tickle me, I did a lot of things with Thompson Center years ago and shot the first critters and the first encores made, literally.
Yeah.
And but one of the things that really always impressed me was the accuracy. We'd go somewhere and I'd show up with a 308 and I shot a 30-06 a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And that had velocities of about a 308 in that sharp barrel.
Yeah.
And people look at you and go, you're going to shoot that thing? You know, they put up a target at 100 yards, and from a decent to a good rest, they were shooting their deer rifles, which were might be 300s or 30-06, and they'd shoot an inch and a half, 2-inch group, and they were thrilled with it. And I could get up there with that 30-06 Encore, same ammo that they were using, and literally shoot 1-inch or less groups at that distance.
Yeah.
It was the gun more than anything else, but also shot it a whole lot. I had a really good trigger and a good rest.
And see, that's the thing, too, is that handgun hunters are generally more practiced with their guns. I mean, how many times have you been in a deer camp where a guy pulls out a gun he hasn't shot since last season?
I've always wondered why people are like that, because to me that's been counterproductive.
I agree. Yeah, and you're absolutely right that those short guns are every bit as capable.
They're absolutely amazing.
Yeah.
I brought you a gun today that I'm going to ask you to do the trigger job on. It's a .454 Casull and a Taurus Raging Hunter, and I think it's got probably about an 8, almost 9-inch barrel on it. that thing at 100 yards with 300 grain Hornady XTP bullets, their commercial loads, even with a tough trigger, it's shooting an extremely fine group at 100 yards.
It's funny you mention accuracy because I think it was Jack O'Connor who said only accurate rifles are interesting. Is that right?
Yeah, there's several people that said that. Yeah, I think it was one of them in Warren Page.
Yes, yeah,
one
yeah.
All those older,
so
that age.
Not to disparage that generation, but to me, accurate guns are not interesting anymore. And let me tell you why.
Okay, interesting.
Because that's it. That's the baseline, right?
Yes.
Accuracy is the baseline, and we have gone like those guys led the guns of those the gunsmiths of that era. You know, the guys who were taking the $5 Mauser out of the barrel at Woolworths and turning it into a bench rest gun.
True.
Those guys laid the foundation for accuracy. So to me, accuracy is not interesting. I mean, it is in so much as that a gun has to be accurate.
Right.
But we figured that out. You know, that's been done. There is no secret to accuracy anymore, and our capabilities now are so good that someone in a little shop like me can build a rifle that shoots half MOA all day, because as long as everything is concentric, parallel, and perpendicular to the bore, your gun's going to shoot accurately. Now, the rest of it's up to you. Trigger, you know, scope, et cetera, et cetera.
Right.
So to me, I'm fascinated by the unique, you know, like the Raging Hunter is a perfect example, because an 8 3/8 barrel with a Tridge red dot on it, that's different. You know, and of course it has to be accurate. We're not picking up guns that aren't accurate anymore.
Well, you know, you're exactly right, by golly. You're exactly right. I want to go back years ago when I was doing all the stuff with the TCs and long time with the Ruger,
mm-hmm.
with the Super Blackhawk Hunter, and all those, I used long eye relief scopes.
Uh-huh.
Now, I understand you're using some other scopes on some of the guns as well.
So I learned from Ernie Bishop about using rifle scopes on rifle caliber specialty pistols. So, for instance, and this is purely a personal preference thing, although I do believe if you want to shoot in those competitions where you shoot out to a long distance, you've
got
to have a rifle scope, because there's no handgun scope with those capabilities right now.
Right.
But
yeah,
so
I'm with you. Okay.
Personally, like on revolvers, I much prefer a long eye relief scope.
Right.
You know, the Burris is a long time standard, but I'm really into red dots too. On the bolt action or Thompson centers, depending on the caliber,
right.
I like to put a rifle scope on it. I just, first of all, with the longer guns, it lets you have a little bit longer range. With the, like right now, I have just a cheap 3-9 Vari-X 2 loophole on my 7mm 08 Encore. And there's a learning curve, obviously, but I've never been scoped. You know, you have to learn, you know, you do see a little bit of a black ring sometimes,
right.
You know, because your eyes, but the good thing about that is that that's how you can self-correct parallax by making your ring
yes.
equal. So, you know, it works out for me pretty well.
Interesting. I've never really put a standard rifle scope on, mm-hmm. on the handgun thing. But then also, I was never really shooting at those mm-hmm. long ranges
yeah.
to where, and when I did, it was simply a
yeah,
holdover.
That's right, yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Where you get to shooting a lot. Years ago, what I'd do is I'd set up 4x8 sheets of plywood,
mm-hmm.
and then I would back off and always hold it the exact same spot,
mm-hmm.
somewhere close to
oh,
the top.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then I could literally follow my drop. I knew exactly
yep.
what my drop was at different distances.
Well, that was back before plywood cost more than a gun.
Back when plywood was
yeah.
very cheap.
That's right.
Ammunition was really
that's
available.
Right.
And it was relatively cheap, too. But I learned about doing the holdovers,
sure.
you know,
mm-hmm.
out to, like I said, out to about 400 or 500 yards, particularly with
yeah.
the Encores and the XP-100.
That and that's had. Another good thing to say, too, is that even if your scope has drops built into it, you need to do that. Because what it says on paper is not always what
yeah,
your gun does.
Yeah, I've got one thing that I've spent a lot of time out at the FTW ranch.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll set up a scope on a particular rifle, and then we will true that rifle and scope ammunition combination to the certain ranges, so we know that, yes, this is a great setting where you've got a turn-up or adjustable reticle kind of thing.
And a lot of scope manufacturers these days are offering custom elevation turrets for your chosen
load.
You
tell them what load you're going to use and basically what elevation you're going to hunt at, and it's amazing how close those things are in that situation. Handguns, revolvers, or single shots, or bolt action? What do you prefer?
Well,
or is there a preference?
I don't have a preference, only because, like, I'm so keen on the collecting side of it. You know, I'm always like, I'm a project based guy. Like, my interest lasts only as long as I've been successful at a project. You know, it's been a real chore for me to have a career. So. I for instance, I'll work up a gun and then I'll hunt with it for a season, half a season, or maybe even one hunt. If I'm like, I want to kill a pig or a big buck with this gun, and then I'll move on to the next one. And then when I've gone through enough or I just have an itch, I'll go back to it. So for me, you know, I want to try everything. I've hunted with all action types, I guess you could say, with the exception of like some of the more esoteric, like the Lone Eagle or the Dominator or whatever. I haven't done much with those. But like this season, I hunted mostly with an Encore, but I killed my first deer this season with my 357 Blackhawk Bisley. And then I hunted that season with the bolt action as well, that 458 I built. So I guess, you know, where we hunt here in the Hill Country, there aren't a whole lot of opportunities for longer shots. And one of the things I love about handgun hunting is how much better a woodsman it's made me. So I really do like the idea of an iron-sided revolver on my hip, stalking through the woods, you know, being able to get close. Because I found hunting that way, man, the first season we hunted, and I'm toting around the 7.5-pound gun on a sling, and, you know, I'm not a small guy, so just like chomping through the woods, you know. How many times I got busted, it was just insane. But if you go into the woods and you manage to get within 40 or 50 yards of a deer, and that deer busts you and runs away before you get a shot, you come out of those woods still with that hepped up feeling of, oh my gosh, that was incredible.
Amen.
Yeah.
Amen.
Yeah. And so that to me, and that was with that scoped bolt action even. So to me, that's where the fun of it lies. Now, in our community, there are guys who get different, you know, different, and they hunt different ways because of where they are in the country. But for me, the closer you can get, the better, and that's part of the fun of it.
You mentioned the red dot type sites. Why those?
Well, first of all, they're easy. They're so easy. You're not worrying about parallax and all that stuff. I have a red dot on my squirrel gun. I have a 22 Mark III target with a Fast Fire 3 on it. I love that gun. I love it so much. And it's so much easier to teach kids to shoot handguns with red dots on them.
Yeah.
You know? Than it is a scope. You got, especially a long eye relief scope. I mean, with any kind of scopes, because with a long eye relief scope, you got to teach them how to find their eye relief. With a short eye relief scope, you got to teach them not to get too close. With iron sights, you know, I do want my kids to learn to shoot iron sighted because
Absolutely.
I feel like shooting iron sights is like driving a manual transmission.
Absolutely.
You know, it's not that common these days, but everybody should learn. Yeah, exactly right. That's right. And, but red dots are just, and especially for where I am, it's the most versatile, you know, because I don't care if it's 15 to 200 yards, that red dot is capable.
It is. I've been shooting these revolvers, these Taurus guns here as of late, and with the red dots, and I've got three different ones I've been shooting, and one's got I think a minute dot, one's got a 3.5 minute dot, one's got a 5 minute dot. Mm-hmm. Essentially, all that means is 100 yards. You know, that's
how much that dot covers
kind of thing. And for years, I had shot traditional long eye relief scope, variables that maybe 1.5 to 5 or 2.5 to 7 or 8 or whatever. Generally, very never have turned it up much beyond 4 power because that always seemed to do well. But it was a little bit of an adjustment for me to shoot the red dot sight. Mm-hmm. But once I got into it, it's amazing how quick it is. I can shoot with both eyes open.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
You know, and mm-hmm. although there's so many advantages to it, mm-hmm. and I've gotten to where I really, really like those. And I've been shooting out to 100, 125, 150 mm-hmm. yards with them. And basically, I have no qualms with, depending on what load or,
right.
or caliber I have that I'm shooting, that I shouldn't be able to take a deer out to 125 yards or beyond.
Yeah, and there's a...
Even though, to me, as you mentioned, the thrill comes in.
For sure,
how
yeah.
How close can
sure,
I get
yeah.
before I pull
But it also
trigger.
Depends on what you're hunting, right? You know, like...
Oh, exactly,
like,
yeah.
So there's a guy in Wyoming who put on the first annual handgun hunters competition this year. His mm-hmm. name's Chris Rhodes, who runs a shop up there. And he is really into the long, what we would consider long-range revolver
right.
shooting. And he's taken game with his 44 mag out past 200 yards.
Yeah.
And he uses scopes usually for
yeah.
that kind of shooting. But where he hunts out west, 200 yards is not far.
No, that is getting close to
pronghorn, you know,
exactly.
for a lot of that kind of hunting. And then he does a lot of rock chuck hunting and whatnot. So there are instances in where you can gain the thrill by extending the distance, especially when it comes to predator hunting or small game hunting. You know, shooting a coyote at a couple hundred yards with your 44 mag is pretty fun.
That's a lot of fun.
Yeah,
I've done that too, so
yeah.
I can tell
you. See if you can lob them in there. Yeah. Uh-huh.
It really is. To me, there's just something magical when I get a chance to go out handgun hunting. I've done a lot of it in the past, and I was with Ruger for a long time, and we kept introducing new rifles, mm-hmm. new guns. And
yeah.
Here, take this rifle.
You're like,
take
wait a minute.
Rifle, take this rifle, you know. And the whole time I was sitting there, I really want to shoot my
right.
Black Hawk
yeah.
Hunter 44 mag
yeah.
kind of thing. So now with trying to do some work with the Taurus, mm-hmm. that has opened another door for me once again.
Well, going back to both of our kind of background, you know, growing up, you were talking about the Westerns were big. Growing up for me, one Western in particular, Rio Bravo, you know, John Wayne, Dean Martin.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's just such a great, that I watched that with my grandpa, and that put such an imprint on me. And how many kids just think it is so cool to walk around with a gun on your hip? You know, it's such a ingrained, especially for boys, in
right.
us, that as we carry that into our hunting, we get that added kind of fulfillment of childhood dreams, you know? And that is, for me, that is one of the cool parts about it, because being able to strap onto your hip or cross draw or whatever, not only does it enable you to move through the woods faster, no chance of your rifle barrel snagging on a tree or something like that, but there is kind of this feeling of having a self-contained meat-getting apparatus all over, you know, strapped onto your body. I really like that.
Yeah, there's something special.
Yeah,
about
I know
that.
It is. It's funny.
I don't know quite
exactly.
I think you probably pinned it better than I could have, but you know, you're exactly right. With the guns that you work on here in
mm-hmm.
your shop, how much time do you spend working on handguns? Now, I know that you're working on even developing some handguns.
Yeah, so, like I said, I've been a general gunsmith and rifle builder for years. I did a lot of work on, like, lever guns and single-shot, what people will call buffalo rifles, I guess.
Yeah, the shallow sharps.
Yeah, yeah, high walls, low walls,
yeah.
rolling blocks,
oh my God,
sharps,
yeah.
yeah. But again, my true love is handgunning. So I'm stuck in a place right now where I have a clientele base of local guys who still rely on me to fix their guns.
Right.
And I do still build a few rifles. But I've recently hired a guy by the name of Justin McMillan, who is an American Custom Gun Makers Guild master metalsmith.
Really?
He's well known in the industry for his 1911s, and he's and some revolvers that I can show you too that he's built. And he's come on to help me develop the custom hunting handgun side of the business.
Perfect.
Because that is where my heart is, and that is where I want to take this my business. So that is Handgun Hunter Supply. So what I...
What?
I'll tell you, funny, is I decided to launch Handgun Hunter Supply in March of 2020 when... There was no such thing as being able to get a gun. I thought, I want to cater to specifically curated for the handgun hunter.
Right.
And I don't use debt in my business, so it wasn't like I was going to get a big loan and buy a bunch of stock.
Right.
Then the supply dried up, And I haven't been able to sell a dang thing for a long time. But we're developing the custom side of that, and that's really where I want to go. I do still have, like, my shop still has a bunch of rifles in it, just right. local work. But as far as what we're focusing on, yeah, we're building handguns. We have, you know, XPs. I developed my own rear grip pistol stock for the Remington 700. If it were any way possible to make the XP100 center grip accessible to the public again for a reasonable price, I'd be interested in trying to help with that project. And the, you know, the biggest obstacle there is that crazy trigger mechanism
Absolutely.
That they
yeah.
have.
Yeah.
So yeah, right now we're accepting commissions for custom handguns, and Justin has built handguns for some people that you would know, some very high-end guns made out of some of the craziest stuff in the world. He's well-versed in color case hardening and Damascus and
oh my gracious,
and
yeah.
accuracy. You know, we have, like, the trifecta, beautiful, accurate, reliable
right,
type
right.
thing, and that's not – we didn't come up with that, but we try to adhere to it. And so, yeah, that's where I'm trying to go. But on the other hand, I also don't want to be – because the guns we build are not accessible to everybody. You know, as you know, being in the industry for a while, a custom gun is not cheap.
No.
What we put into a custom gun is not cheap. And
exactly.
revolvers take a lot more, and then 1911s take a lot more than some other guns you could build. But I'm also interested in, once the retail market starts coming back, which I'm seeing signs that it is,
yes, sir.
I want to be able to offer access to people to just be able to have a place to get into it from people who know about it and can steer people. Because you know, you go to your average gun shop. Now I'm talking bigger box stores now, and yeah, they may have your Raging Hunter in the case, but that guy doesn't know anything about it,
and
he doesn't know not to sell a 4.54 Casull as the first revolver anybody gets, you know. And so that's
exactly right.
I mean, this is a good and a bad thing for us, but how many high caliber revolvers have you come across because somebody bought them, didn't have any instructions, shot one cylinder through it, and thought, oh my God, I'm never shooting that again. That hurt.
I can remember particularly when the 460S.
Oh yeah,
500 SW came out. I mean, sales went way up, mm-hmm. and immediately after one shot, maybe two, yeah. they were for sale.
That's right, used gun market. I'm interested in building up that side, the retail side as well,
right.
as a way to guide, to offer people with experience a place to know that these guys, they focus on handgun hunting, and also a place to offer new shooters a way to guide them into it, which I do already now.
Right.
Like, this may not be great for my business, but I don't care so much if you buy from me. I care that you join the community, you know? So if I say, I can't get that for you, but here's what I can recommend, or here's what I recommend you try, that's fine with me. And someday I'll be able to get it, and they'll remember that I was nice to them and helped them out, and so they'll be back.
Well, absolutely. And the way I look at a lot of that stuff, everybody's got a market share.
Mm-hmm.
And if that market is 100, your percentage is 10%, that's 10.
Yeah.
But if it's 10,000, mm-hmm. 10% is 1,000.
Yeah, that's right.
So to me, the bigger we can grow that market,
yes.
regardless what the market share
yes.
is, everybody has a tendency to benefit from it.
And I think, you know, that brings us into what you've told me before about how many handgun hunters there
yeah.
are, and I'll let you repeat that.
Yeah, not that many, but probably about 5 or 6 years ago, we got contacted by the Namibian government. They were looking at possibly starting handgun hunting in Namibia. They not have done that yet, but each time I ask or call, want to talk to one of the ministers, they go, yes, it's in the mail, because there for a PH to take out an archery hunter, he has to have gone through an approved program. So they're doing the same thing, trying to do that with handguns. So when we were doing all that, we got in touch with some of the census people here in the U.S. Their figures showed that there was 1.2 million hunters that hunted with handguns in the U.S.
Now, that
seems really high to me.
Yeah.
But they were very adamant that saying, no, these are good, sound numbers.
Well, a couple of things about that. That could include people who have hunted with a handgun, right?
I think that's yeah. probably what that did, yeah.
Second thing, cut that in half. That's still a big number.
Oh, my gosh, yeah.
yeah.
You know, 500,000, 600,000 people.
Absolutely.
That's a lot of hunters.
And it's such a good time right now, I think, because there are so many people who are saying, I have lost too much control over my world, and this is a way for me to regain it. So they're getting interested in getting their own food. They're getting interested in protecting themselves and whatnot, and learning life skills that 60, 70 years ago, heck, even 40 years ago, were just taken for granted, especially, you know, at least where I'm from. And so I think there's a huge opportunity, because there's also, I hate to say it, but some people have earned it, the view of traditional hunting, especially in Texas, you know, where we hunt a lot from blinds at feeders. And so there's that, we want it to be more fair. I'm using air quotes as big as I can.
Right.
Because, you know, those of us who have hunted a long time in that arena know that, first of all, if we don't do that, deer will starve.
Yes.
Second of all, it's not a gimme always.
No.
Especially if you're hunting for a specific animal. So I think bow hunting has gained a big resurgence, but and bow hunters are our brothers and sisters. You know,
amen.
I mean, they are as adamant about the challenge as we are. But I think there's also an opening, especially for urban people. You know, the cities are seeing a resurgence in people. You know, I've met so many people from Austin, which is just down the road, who have chickens in their backyard. And I can't, if some, wait until the zoning people find out about that. But, you know, farmers markets are huge. Just the idea of there's a major hunting show on Netflix now, you know, so there's there is an opportunity for us to bring people into the fold, as long as we have the correct attitude about it, of like, this isn't about politics, this isn't about policy, this is about, we are a self-reliant community who uses this method to get food for our families and improve ourselves in the process.
Yeah, I think we're seeing that across the board.
Even
people that live in out in the country, once again. You know,
oh, sure.
A lot of people have lost skills,
yeah,
quite frankly, even though they may have grown up in the country, or they've forgotten them. And all of a sudden, there seems to be this huge resurgence of this. I mean, it's very obvious in the number of sales of hunting license and fishing license, of course, gun sales. And then, you know, I'm leaving when you and I part company here today to go teach at the FTW ranches, where they do the sportsman all-weather all-terrain marksmanship thing. We've got a new hunter school there, where we take people in who essentially have no experience at all with guns, teach them about guns, teach them about ammo, teach them about scope, teach them about how to shoot, teach them how to hunt. I teach the biology side of it and a few other things. We teach them how to cape, how to gut, how to skin, how to quarter, how to cut the meat up, and then how to prepare it. So we take them from A to Z.
Yeah.
And there are people lined up for this, and they're paying good money for it.
Yeah.
But in the process, that is happening too on other places as well too.
Right. So, and I do that. So I have a standing offer to anybody now. I don't have a big place to be able to say, yeah, y'all come out to the ranch.
Right.
But I know a lot of landowners around here and a lot of people. People come to me, if you want to learn how to hunt, or you want to learn how to hunt with handguns specifically,
right,
I'll bring my handguns out. I'll let you shoot them, and you can see which one you like best, and then we'll go hunting. If you want to have a chance to do that, I don't charge a dime for that, because I, like I said, want people to have the experience.
Thank you, thank you, thank you. And what a great way to do that, too. I love the fact that I'll bring my handguns out. And
oh, yeah, absolutely.
So they can see what works well for them.
Absolutely. And then you can ask my wife this, too. Literally my favorite thing to do in the entire world is have people over to my house, cook them some game, and have them say, oh, my gosh, that's fill in the blank, you know? That's
absolutely
squirrel? That's deer? That's deer heart? You know, that kind of thing?
Right.
I love, love, love doing that. And I think the more we do that, the more, you know, our world, not to get philosophical, our world is going to be saved by keeping things local, by keeping our community smaller.
Absolutely.
And focusing inward on the people around us directly. And that is such a good way to do it. It's such a good way to do it.
It truly is. And that kind of leads into, we talked a little bit about education. There used to be an organization called Handgun Hunters International that guys like Larry Kelly, who was with Magnaport, J.D. Jones, and a few others started several years ago, and it's kind of gone by the wayside. They had a publication called The Six Gunner. You're reprising some of this.
Yeah, used to be no more. Handgun Hunters International is back. The quick story of that is that I started seeing online a lot of people asking about where they could find copies of The Six Gunner. Well, J.D. Jones, one of the godfathers of handgun hunting, started Handgun Hunters International in 1979. The first six-gunner was October 1979, and it ended in, I think, summer of 2016. And that whole time, God bless him, he was typing, cutting, pasting, and having newsprint made of the six-gunner. There was no such thing as PDF scan, So I reached out to J.D. I said, hey, would it be okay with you if you sent me some six-gunners and I digitized them and I would give them away? Because I'm only invested in keeping this information from, you know, getting moth-eaten.
Right.
And so he said, it's a big job, you know, it's a big job. I said, I know, but I'm willing to tackle it. So he sent me a few and I did it and sent him what it looked like. And he said, yeah, that's good. So this big box shows up of every six gunner from 1979 to 2016. And I started digitizing them in a PDF form and sending them out for free. If you sign up for my email, it's free. You know, you get on the list and it's free.
Exactly.
And I'm continuing to, as I digitize them, they go out. Well, then I thought, man, there are a lot of people who are interested in this. I wonder what happened to Handgun Hunters International. Well, I spoke with JD and he said, you know, the internet killed it, was his opinion.
Right.
And because there is so much free information out there on the internet. And I thought, yeah, I get that. I get why that would be. But I wonder if there's not an opportunity to use the internet as a tool, but not make that the primary focus of the organization. And so I asked him, I said, are there any reasons that I couldn't bring this back? He said, no, there aren't any reasons, except, you know, if you know JD, he does not mince words.
No, never had. Never
he said, you know, you're going to come up against some, you know, think about this, think about that,
right.
Think about all the information that's already out there. Well, and I said, fair enough, I will, but I decided to go ahead with it anyway because, so I, long story longer, I started it and it launched last month. So July,
right.
2021, Handgun Hunters International is officially back in action. The Six Gunner is now a digital publication, which enables it to be, you know, just full color, great pictures, good articles. And, it is just, it's what I want to do with my life, you know. It's kind of one of those things.
I love it.
I believe, here's what I think Handgun Hunters International can be made into now. I see it as three parts. The organization itself, its members, and the industry. I want each one to become, I hate saying it, but synergistic, you know. It's not a word I like to use, but you and I sometime around, we need to get around the campfire and come up with a replacement word.
I totally agree. Believe me. I hate that word.
Yeah. Anyway, each one working in tandem to improve the other. Like, for instance, I would love to have a place, with a membership large enough for the industry to go to know, well, here's what handgun hunters truly want. And that would benefit both sides, where in the industry could say, well, we have more confidence that if we bring this out, it will sell. And then we could say, well, the industry's not bringing out stuff that we don't want to buy. I also think like that a means to funnel new hunters in. I want handgun. I'm working on developing a mentorship program that to where new hunters can be involved with experienced guys and learn how to hunt with a handgun. We're doing handgun hunts. You know, I'm working on getting places where I can find, you know, say like, hey, we're bringing 10 of us. How much would it cost per person? And then I put the word out and say, hey, it's X amount of dollars. If you want to come,
right.
Come. And we have our first hunt on the books for next spring. It's a pig hunt down in South Texas. Another thing that I'm doing that is similar to the rest of the internet. We do have a forum on Handgun Hunters International, but I am a very strict moderator, I know the old saw about how keyboard anonymity, you know, and false keyboard courage.
Right.
Unfortunately, and this is the bad side, that but I never shy away from talking about anything about any community, is that it can sometimes devolve into tribalism. And I hate that about us, but it is what it is. And in the past, there have been arguments about, oh, you've heard them all. You know, is an XP100 really a handgun? Can you hunt with, you know, lead versus you know, jacketed, et cetera. That's fine. And I don't begrudge anybody whatever legal method they use. They're welcome under our tent. And I also don't mind a vigorous debate. But I moderate very heavily for politeness, and you're not allowed to disparage other people's comments.
Excellent.
So because I want new people to be able to come and be like, what? I don't want them to think, man, what is going on with this? I want everybody to feel welcome. So that it's going great. It's easy to use. The format has been well received. It's getting a lot of engagement already. It's really fun to just see, like, people are just posting all kinds of pictures. There's already probably a few hundred pictures on there of people saying, oh, you know, here's some of my successes in the past, and et cetera. And then there's already new guys asking, hey, I need a scope for this, what would you guys recommend? And that's exactly what I want the community to be. However, I say this a lot, the forum is only our pen pal organization, right? It is not the primary means by which we run our organization. It's a way for us to stay in touch when we're not together. But my goal, if I can grow this thing big enough, is to have, I would love to get to the point where we could have chapters, you know, around the country. But I'm planning on trying to get enough actual physical gatherings around in different regions of the country so that people can meet, shake hands, look each other in the eye, know who they are, so that when we do have to, we have that basis of a personal relationship, which there is no replacement for when we go to interact with each other online. And one of the good things, like this past summer, a whole bunch of us were at the Handgun Hunters competition up in Wyoming, so we already know each other, you know, and it's that there is no replacement for that, and that is where I am focused.
Very interesting. There are several places. I mentioned the FTW Ranch earlier. I mean, that is a fantastic training facility.
And Tim
Fallon is the primary guy.
Yeah,
there.
We've emailed back and forth a little bit.
I thought you probably had. Yeah. And several years ago, this goes back, I can't remember, several years ago, let's say that, Tim and I looked very strongly at putting together a school built around handgun hunting. And then we got off into several different things. Each was going a little bit different direction, and we kind of got away from it. But there would be an ideal opportunity, I think, maybe to talk to Tim, because he's always looking for quote-unquote business.
Yeah, sure.
He can house probably close to 30 people on the ranch. And it is one of the primary, I mean, the primary, whatever, training facilities in terms of long distance shooting. Again, though, he stresses you learn to shoot at those great distances, so when you crawl within 100 yards or something or less, you can precisely place that bullet, kind of thing, which I really appreciate. But that might be, and I'll visit with him. I'll be there later today and say, hey, this is something you need to get in touch with Ryan, and you know, maybe that can be something done similar to what you did up in Wyoming.
Well, I am absolutely interested in that. My feelers are out everywhere for anybody who's interested in helping with stuff like that. So I will talk details off mic, but yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
I put it on this thing.
Yeah, I would love that. Absolutely, I would love that. And I know the FTW has a fantastic reputation of taking care of its guests and being the consummate professionals. I would absolutely love that.
Yeah,
and I'll tell you,
we'll approach him about it.
Another thing, too, we're a baby organization right now, but one of the great things about us is because we're handgun hunters, we love paying for things in sweat and blood.
Yes.
So, not usually tears, you know.
No.
But, yeah, man, so we will figure something out. Yeah, and I'm the kind of guy, like, you're like, hey, can you haul 100 steel targets somewhere? And if that gives me a chance to just stand behind someone, I'm happy to do it.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Let's talk a little bit more about, how can somebody learn more about Handgun Hunters International?
Yeah, so I have a website up, handgunhuntersinternational.com. You go there, and on the homepage, it has everything you need. You can join. It's $4.99 a month. to join the organization, or if you pay for a year, you get 1 month free. I am offering a limited number, only 100 founding members, and that is going to be limited to 100. I do have some of those left. It's $250, but it's gets you in for life, and you get a discount on our merchandise, et cetera, et cetera. And once you're in, that's when you get to access the forum. You get to see what hunts we have coming up. You get to buy from our merchandise store. So that's one other thing I forgot to mention. I'm not, and as everybody has told me, I'm not trying to get rich on this thing, but only members can buy HHI stuff. So if you see somebody with an HHI shirt, hat, you know that they are a member.
Yeah. I like that too. Yeah. There's something to be said a little bit about exclusivity
Absolutely.
In certain instances.
Yeah. And not just that, but a means to recognize each other. I mean, if you're walking down the street and you see
somebody, but I'll tell you something, if that guy is wearing something that's got HHI on it, you know what it is. To me, it's going to be somebody I want to visit with.
Absolutely right.
It's going to be somebody that I may suggest, hey, would you like to hunt? You ought to go talk to so-and-so, because they do accommodate.
Yeah, absolutely. Another thing that I'm keen on getting some other ideas for the organization, I would like to get a database together. This is a huge project that I'm going to need help with, of both gun ranges and outfitters that are handgun hunter friendly or focused. So, as you know, if you go to a lot of gun ranges, they don't trust handguns on the long range. You know, they want to limit you to the 25-yard bays. I would like to find those that do, so that, you know, if you're running around, you're like, I need to go to a range, or if you're traveling, whatever, you can find one, or find one in your area. And also, outfitters that are okay with handgun hunters coming and know how to accommodate and how to guide them. I would love to get that as a perk as well.
I think, too, as the word gets out, I think you'll have both those groups coming to you and saying, hey, you know, how do we get on the list kind of thing as well, too. Because there are some outfitters that don't understand handgun hunting, but there's still quite a few of them that I know a few of them that not secretly, but they hunt with handguns more than they do with a rifle anymore.
Yeah. There's a lot of interest out there, I think. And one more thing I want to say about industry participation. I call it a business partner that can join HHI, and it's $250 a year, and they get advertising in the Six Gunner, and then they'll get advertising across our media as that develops as well. And then they get a link on our website to where people can go to their site. Now, one of the thing that's important to me about that is that they have to answer this question. How do you serve the handgun hunting community? Because I'm not going to accept an advertiser or a partner, rather, who doesn't. You know, I'm not going to take a rifle maker just because I want their advertising.
Exactly.
Because I don't want that erodes trust of the community. So, and I'm not talking about just big names. Yeah, sure, I'd love to have Smith & Wesson and Taurus and Hornady come and become business partners. But I'm also talking about small gun shops that are interested in handgun hunting, small boutique handgun, like my business and Chris's business up in Wyoming, and some other places who are not big shops but are passionate about handgun hunting. So it's open to anybody, and I try to price it competitively to where people can afford it.
Absolutely. Yeah.
But the goal is that, you know, it's people who are experienced or are interested in handgun hunting that's going to see it, and that's it. So that's another aspect. I'm not a natural salesman, but I'm only selling because I believe the more we get, the better it's going to be for the members. You know, it's not about me, it's about them. And that's why I'm always open to feedback, always open to comments. I want to make this something that serves everybody.
Absolutely fantastic. Handgun hunting is so much fun, and it requires a little bit of skill learning, but it's not impossible. Almost anybody that I've ever run into that had any kind of interest at all with picking up a handgun and learning how to shoot it can be a pretty, and if they know a little bit about hunting, the hunting is really not that different from hunting with a bow or hunting with a muzzleloader or even with a rifle. But if they've got a little bit of interest in handgun hunting, I found that most of them get to be pretty darn proficient with a handgun.
Absolutely.
Particularly at hunting ranges very quickly.
Yeah. And that translates into other life skills. You know, shooting fundamentals are shooting fundamentals, and if you put in the time to practice with your hunting gun, it's going to make you better with your self-defense gun as well. And it's also going to make you more confident with that gun if, God forbid, you ever had to use it. So there's a lot of crossover.
There really is. For somebody that's kind of halfway interested, maybe they're hearing this for the first time, or maybe they've heard a little bit about handgun hunting, what's the best advice you can give them about getting into handgun hunting?
The best advice that I could give, first you start with, do you have a handgun?
Right.
And if you have a handgun, then I would say there is something you can hunt with that handgun. Obviously, you don't want to go deer hunting with a 380 pocket pistol, but if you could practice and get close enough to a rabbit, you can hunt that and eat that. And how good would you be with your pocket pistol if you could kill a rabbit, right? Yeah. So,
exactly.
I mean, that's only to say hunt with what you got. Get
right
to the field. Get out there and do it no matter what you have. Reach out to me. Reach out to you, to somebody who just say, hey, do you know I live in this state? Do you know anybody I could call or that's close? Because I have a good base of people who I could say, hey, would you mind, meeting so-and-so at the range and bringing a couple of guns for them to shoot or whatever. But of course, I will go back to the age-old advice of anybody getting involved in hunting anywhere, and that is start with a .22. Get yourself.
I love that.
Even if it's a Heritage revolver, right?
Exactly.
I mean, a cheap gun. It's not going to put you out a lot, but it'll give you that experience. You could definitely hunt small game with it, and if your budget allows, you can step up into the buck marks, the Mark III or Mark IV now,
right?
Or the Bearcats or the single sixes and whatnot. Get a .22, and I tell you what, small game hunting absolutely translates to big game hunting, both in shooting proficiency and in woodsmanship. It is no easier to stock up on a cottontail than it is to stock up on a whitetail.
And they're much smaller targets.
And they're much smaller targets, right. Yeah. And then after that, after you get proficient with that, then start moving into bigger calibers for medium and big game. Here's another thing. You do not need a 500 Magnum to go deer hunting. You do not need the biggest. You do not need to open that cylinder and fill it with Panatellas to go hunting. Be reasonable. What did Elmer Keith do with 44 specials? I load, as long as you keep the ranges reasonable and your loads correct, inside of 50 yards or sometimes further, a .357 will do it, especially on our deer in Texas.
Right.
You're going to have to temper what you use to your region, but you do not have to shoot the biggest, boominest gun to be a successful handgun hunter. As a matter of fact, that's usually more of a setback than a start.
It really can be, and I really appreciate the fact that you're bringing out more about the small game. So very often when we talk hunting these days, particularly with something that shoots a single projectile,
mm-hmm.
Most people immediately think in terms of deer, hogs, and big game.
Right.
Talking about moose, elk, all those kind of things. But there's so many hunting opportunities available in every state for rabbits and then throughout at least throughout the West for squirrels.
Mm-hmm.
And both those are absolutely fantastic to eat on top of everything else.
Absolutely right. And I love, I have three kids. And how great is squirrel hunting to introduce kids into hunting?
Oh, my gosh,
yeah.
Yes.
And we're lucky here, no close season, no bag limit.
Right.
And in this area, there's a bunch of pecan farmers, and they don't care. They're like, please come shoot
yes.
squirrels,
Exactly.
And fried squirrel is delicious. Squirrel stew is delicious. Squirrel and dumplings is a classic Southern
Amen.
Recipe. And, those are low barrier to entry game animals that you can start hunting. And there is an opportunity everywhere in the U.S. for something like that. I was just in Wyoming. You don't even have to have a hunting license to kill prairie dogs out there. They just please come, shoot these prairie dogs. And how good is that for target practice and accuracy?
It's fantastic.
Yeah.
And even like Oklahoma, even if you're non-resident, you do not need a license to hunt wild hogs.
Oh, right. Mm-hmm.
And I think Texas is kind of on the edge of that
yeah.
right now. But there are so many different opportunities out there from the very small game to even the larger game. Before we close this out, tell me again how the best way to get in touch with you, with your shop, in case somebody's interested
sure.
in a custom gun or maybe they've got some questions about wanting to design a custom gun.
Yeah, so you can reach out to me at handgunhuntersupply.com, and my email there is just ryan@handgunhuntersupply.com. And talking's always free with me. Even if you want to call and ask questions or say, what would it take to do this, I love talking to people. So, yeah, that's where you can reach out for custom work.
Perfect. And also for the Handgun Hunters International, how do they get in touch with you there?
Again, the website is handgunhuntersinternational.com. We were going for world's longest website name. But yeah, handgunhuntersinternational.com, and my email there again is ryan@handgunhuntersinternational.com. And if you get one confused, I see them both. So reach out to me with any questions, comments, concerns you have. I'm happy to help.
Ryan, thank you so very much for joining us around the campfire. I got a feeling we're going to do this numerous times in the future, and I can't wait to sit around something beside a desk campfire this morning and really delve into some of the things we talked about a little bit earlier. Thank you so much for joining us today, and we look forward to seeing you right back here next week on DSC's Campfires with Larry Wyson. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks for joining us around the campfire. To leave a comment or suggestion for an upcoming episode, go to Instagram at Larry Wysoon Outdoors. Please join me right here next week for another DSC's Campfires.
DSC Campfires with Larry Wysoon has also been brought to you by the Texas Wildlife Association, working for tomorrow's wildlife today. TRHP Outdoors. Kenitrek Boots for the trails less traveled. Boyt, the finest in hunting gear. Pyramid Air for all things air gun. And Ripcord, rescue travel protection.
Hey everyone, Will Cooper here, host of Hunt Stand's Make Your Mark podcast. Join us as we dive deep into the world of hunting and outdoor pursuits. We've brought together some of the most accomplished individuals in the industry to share their invaluable insights and experiences with you. But here's the kicker. It's not just about hunting tips and tactics. We're exploring how you can carve your own path, elevate your skills, and gain some wisdom from the best in the field. So whether you're a seasoned hunter looking to fine-tune your skills or a newbie eager to learn, our podcast has something for everyone. Stay tuned for more exciting guests and hotter topics. Don't miss out and subscribe to Hunt Stand's Make Your Mark podcast today and start making your mark in the great outdoors.
Brave anglers search for the one they call king, but who will take his throne? Tune in to Waypoint TV's Battle for Silver, Saturday, May 18th from 12 to 6 p.m. Eastern, presented by Abyss Battery. Waypoint TV.